Welcome to the September 25th, 2013 meeting of the Tacoma Landmarks and Preservation Commission. Our first item on their agenda tonight is roll call. Vice Chair Eckley, Elquist, Rahe, Steele, York, are present, as well as ex officio Buffington and McClintock. Item number two, consent agenda. 2A, excusal of absences. Commissioners, Chair House has called in, and Commissioners Chase and Jensen have called in. Item 2B, meeting minutes. I don't believe we have minutes to review.
No, sir. I promise there'll be some soon.
Okay.
No hurry.
All right. So, move approval of the consent agenda. Second?
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Moving along, item number three, design review, 3A, Fireman's Park totem pole. So, turn that over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the Tacoma totem pole was commissioned by Civic Boosters and Curio Shop owners Chester Thorne and William Shear in 1903 and installed at a location near present location the day before President Theodore Roosevelt arrived in Tacoma. Reported to have been carved at a cost of $3,000, the pole is intended to rival Seattle's infamous Pioneer Square totem pole and is symbolic of a broader historical narrative surrounding the role of Puget Sound in the Alaskan Gold Rush and the internationally significant Alaska-Yukon Exposition that was being planned for 1909. The symbols and carvings on the pole are of unknown origin but are suggestive of Haida style of northwestern British Columbia. The pole is not of Coast Salish origin or design. The pole has been undergoing a structural and conditional analysis by the city this year. On April 12, 2013, during this analysis, structural engineers under contract with the city determined that there was a significant risk of structural failure due to rot and deterioration. The Public Works Director ordered the immediate temporary bracing of the pole while city engineers began working on a strategy for long-term external bracing. This application is to install a single bracing pole behind the totem pole with brackets attached to two points of the pole to stabilize in place. Three options for bracket design are being presented to the commission and are included in your packet. Prior meetings that have occurred on the subject, on April 24th, staff briefed the commission on the status of the pole intended to plan to stabilize it. And that was immediately following the when the concern of structural failure became evident. During this briefing, several commissioners questioned the cultural appropriateness of the plan due to cultural factors and requested that staff further research traditional practices related to declining totem poles, the history and meaning of the pole, including the significance of the symbolism, and whether the pole is legitimately carved. On May 7th, staff convened a working group to discuss and further research these questions. The outcome of this discussion was that the most appropriate course of action for the cultural safety of the pole was that it should be removed and relocated to a place where it could be composed, and that every interpretive opportunity to educate the public about the history and context of the pole and totem poles generally be explored. On May 8th, staff presented this to the Landmarks Preservation Commission to gather additional information regarding safety issues and costs associated with stabilization. Direction was that an additional analysis needed to be done regarding the history of the pole. On June 4th, the Tacoma Arts Commission convened a deaccession review panel to consider removal of the totem pole from the municipal art collection per its deaccession policy. The panel voted unanimously to retain the pole in the municipal art collection but did not arrive at a consensus regarding the best approach to deal with the pole other than to conclude it should be preserved either standing or stored protected in an indoor location. On June 12th, this commission was briefed on options regarding the preservation of the pole and request from staff for guidance regarding structural bracing options. Unlike most of the projects that this commission applied or reviews, staff recommends that the Secretary of the Interior standards for preservation as opposed to rehabilitation be considered for this project. There's a four-point approach in the Secretary of the Interior standards. Most of these are for adaptive reuse, most of these projects, and those are rehabilitation standards. The four approaches are rehabilitation, preservation, restoration, and reconstruction. The staff recommends the standards that apply being the property, number one, the property to be used as it was historically or given a new use that maximizes the retention of distinctive materials, features, and spaces and other spatial relationships. Where treatment and use have not been identified, a property will be protected and, if necessary, stabilized until additional work may be undertaken. Standard number three, each property will be recognized as a physical record of its time, place, and use. Work needed to stabilize, consolidate, and conserve existing historic materials and features will be physically and visually compatible, identifiable upon close inspection, and properly documented for future research. Staff analysis is as follows. The Tacoma Totem Pole is a city landmark, and any alterations that affect its appearance requires the approval of the Landmarks Preservation Commission prior to those changes being made for TMC 1305-046. Item two, the pole is primarily significant for its association with the early development of Tacoma, the Alaska-Yukon Gold Rush, and its effects on the development of commercial activity in the Puget Sound region. Item three, the pole is not coastal Salish original design. Although the style of the pole has been described as being suggestive of Haida, the identities and cultural backgrounds of the carvers is unknown, and the carved elements themselves are atypical in dimension and design. Item four, according to an engineer's report issued on April 12, 2013, examination of the pole indicated there was a significant risk of sudden structural failure due to deterioration. The pole was temporarily braced as a result and remains this way currently. Item five, the Landmarks Preservation Commission has received status updates and requests for feedback in meetings on April 24th, May 8th, and June 12th. Item six, the proposed bracing design will support the pole in place, avoiding the risks associated with removal and reinstallation of the pole and costs associated with transport and storage, thus meeting the Secretary of the Interior standard for preservation number one. Item seven, the single support pole will be placed behind the totem pole and will be painted black to be both distinguishable from the historic pole as well as visually subservient, thus meeting Secretary of the Interior standard number three. And based on this, staff recommends approval of the engineering design and concept, although we do not make a recommendation regarding the specific bracing option. And here today also is Darius Thompson, who's the project manager for this. He's been before the commission before to talk about this as well. Come join us. I should also say that from your packet, I just passed out before the meeting, and I think it was out there when folks walked in, was the current cost estimates for the bracing and stabilization as well.
Can I ask a question, Ruben? Did you say we do not make a recommendation based on the specific bracing type?
Staff did not.
Staff did not, okay.
No, it's my understanding that we're just going to discuss and recommend which is where we can
right.
Most
I just need direction on which way you guys are going to go as far as the bracing. We can move forward with the design and start getting this constructed and also, you know, the totem pole back open and get the fence out of there and clean up a little bit and get rolling with this project. So.
Open up to discussion among commissioners. Any thoughts or recommendations, ideas about which of the three are most appropriate?
Just to open this up for discussion, there's three options that are presented here. The first option, brace type one, shows that there's a ring that is going to go around the back side of the totem pole, but not continue around the front. In lieu of that, there's two through bolts that are going all the way through the totem pole and will be visible on the front side of the totem pole. At each brace, there will be two through bolt locations that we'll see on the front of the pole.
Right.
Okay, and then the second option, there's a ring that's bracing the pole that goes all the way around the pole.
Right.
That will be how many inches tall? 9 inches tall. So we'll see a 9-inch high ring that goes all the way around the pole.
At both places.
But we won't have visible through bolts. Instead, it looks like there will just be a couple leg screws there on the back. Then the third option, we do see that there's the same as option one, where there's the continuous through bolts all the way through that we're going to see on the front side of the pole. The ring is just around the back, and rather than having a pipe bracing it, we have a flat steel plate,
right.
And then two steel plates on either side of it that aren't dimensioned. It doesn't appear as if they give a height for those plates on either side, but it appears as if there are plates that are welded to that.
Okay. Stiffeners, yeah.
Stiffeners, yeah. Mm-hmm. But we can assume that those are something like 4 inches or something like that, probably.
Can I ask just one question about the second option? I thought, the way I read it, it looked like the back plate, the half circle on the back was 9 inches. Is
mm-hmm.
that correct? And then is the front plate also 9 inches, or is it 4 inches?
The front plate that goes on top of the steel is 4 inches. So we got the steel one go all the way around it, and then we got to lock those in. We have another 4-inch plate on top of that.
Okay, got it.
To go.
So there's the 4-inch back plate, but there's a 9-inch ring. It's going all the way around the pole.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, at first blush, I thought that the option type number one was preferable, but now that I see that there's the through bolts that go all the way through it, I'm sort of questioning that. I don't know if anyone else has a... I mean, obviously, I think it's less desirable to have a 9-inch ring going all the way around it,
right.
But at the same time, it's a little unfortunate that we do have to have through bolts in lieu of that.
Because we don't know the integrity of the wood, so we want to make sure that we have something to latch on to and brace it and stabilize the pole.
Yeah. I mean, it's understandable why you need it. It's just...
Seems to be the worst of the two evils, just 3/4 of an inch bolt sticking out as opposed to a 9-inch ring.
Yeah.
I'm sure we can get those painted to the color, maybe, you know, a brown color to kind of hide it a little bit. We can try whatever you guys want.
Sometimes they plug holes like that, so they could over drill the size on the outside face of it to allow for a wood plug to go in over the top of the bolt head. And then that wood plug is cut flush with the face of the wood.
Right, and then we can
hook painted the picture.
Yeah,
and it might be another way of water getting entrapped into the wood, and then
it might be. So that could be something that perhaps you could discuss with your structural engineer.
I think my preference would be whatever option does the least damage to the total pole.
Yeah,
I totally agree that a 9-inch ring is not optimal for just aesthetic purposes, but if that's what we need to avoid having a whole poster through, I think that would be our solution.
I think number one would be my preference if we could get those pins in the front recessed a little bit.
So only the ones in the front, not the ones that's going on the back side where they still play this. We're fine with those.
Yeah, no, it would just be the front side. But Megan, I think you bring up a good point, and that's the... What's the criteria that we're going to use for this? Is it minimal damage, but the ring solution still has bolts that are going into the back of it?
I mean, they both are affecting the integrity of the structure to a certain degree, but whichever one it affects it less.
It would seem to me, just not that I have a horse in this race, but it would seem to me that. The options that have the bolts running all the way through the pole. I mean, there's a certain question that we have just about the integrity of the pole. I mean, is there enough there to make that viable? So that would seem to argue more for the second option in terms of kind of encircling the pole, and it's not quite as dependent on, you know, having something going through it.
There's no way to tell in advance either, is there, if there's enough solid wood to do through bolts until you actually start drilling?
Right.
Yeah, but
you'll have to get to that point where we start drilling, and then we know exactly what we're doing.
What's inside
there. I mean, we also don't know if those the ring that would completely encircle the totem pole, if it would be right over the character on the pole.
I don't know if we had that attached to it, but we did have the locations where we had the 25 to 50 foot, where we would have the bracing. The first brace would start at 25, and then the next one at 50. Yes. Sorry, Ruben. We can have that included in the packet, but those are the locations where we.
Okay. So we can assume that 4.5 inches on either side of that 25-foot line is
very
going
close
to have
the
a
same
steel
design
plate
right across
it.
The brows of
that. I mean, I think, back to Megan's comment, I think it would be most desirable to do as little damage to the pole as possible, but as you can see in the photos, the pole's already checked and warped and all kinds of other things, and I think that putting two through bolts at each of the braces is pretty minimally invasive. It would be similar to if this were a historic structure and we had we needed to lock the brick facade back to the structure of the building because the brick facade was coming apart. We would do a similar method of drilling through the brick and that putting a plate over it. No, go ahead.
In that context, I think that would be trying to preserve the structure further so that, like, if you drill through the wood to get to the building or the wood, that's your example.
Yeah.
That it would be preserving, trying to keep it from falling down.
Yeah.
Which is, I guess, essentially what we're doing here. But if you, you know, if what Marshall was saying, if the integrity of the wood is already kind of destroyed and we drill through it, then we run the risk of, you know, really hurting the pole and maybe even destroying the integrity, and then we'd have to brace it anyway.
Maybe a naive question, but what stops the wood from rotting around the bolts?
You can try to use stainless steel type of bolts that won't really rust or anything, but
that was mine.
Too much.
I'm sorry.
Yes, and really too much you can really do. We can look into that and see what kind of application or type of coating or sealant we can put on each through bolt to try to make sure we protect the wood and the bolt.
Sorry. I guess my question again still is, like, granted we're, you know, throwing a brace on this thing so it can stay up longer, but it's like, is there any preventative measure as far as the exterior of the wood to stop it from getting moisture and continuing to rot? I mean, it's already rotting. I don't think you can paint a brace on the stuff to the rotting process. I mean, ultimately, it's like, you know, I'm looking at this option of the bolts, and it's like, just thinking about bolts and wood and how they might work, it's like, I still think the thing is going to rot through the core. So I don't think the bolts stop that from happening or keep it safe from falling, ultimately.
There was some discussion of a wood treatment plan at a previous meeting, wasn't there? Do I recall that correctly, Ruben?
Yeah, one of the outcomes that were discussions we had back in June was that, you know, we have the ability to in the need to stabilize a pole right now if it stays where it is, just for pure safety reasons. And that the steps that would occur after that, and that'd be part of a discussion that also occurs with the Arts Commission, is a plan for dealing with the pole going forward. Yes, and so that's something that we won't forget. We do need to have that discussion of if indeed this plan to stabilize the pole is approved by the commission and the city can go ahead and construct that. But we will have to address the long-term issues with it, for sure.
The first cost that we had here, what appears to be the same scope of work for the brace, mine's dated September 13th, $28,000, and then mm-hmm. September 19th, we have an adjusted one of $39,000.
Right.
And as I said, the scope looks pretty much the same. Could you comment on that?
Well, I checked with our consultant, and I asked him, what does this scope that he sent us for $29,000, what does that entail? And that doesn't entail the crane that's needed to lift this up. It doesn't talk about the traffic control. It doesn't talk about any type of existing rockery that we need to remove. It just tells us some vague things, so I need him to clear things up and put a price towards that as far as, you know, restoring the gray surfaces once we install everything. What are we going to put back gravel to kind of dress it up a little bit more? So we needed a little bit more extra details into it in order to come up with a good cost estimate.
I don't see any of those things in the, at least.
Well, he put the steel pole includes the crane price.
Okay, so the increase of $1 per foot per pound is for the crane.
Yes.
Okay.
So it looks like there wasn't incidentals in whatever the erector of the steel was putting together, because basically the steel erector just bumped up all their numbers by $1 per pound. So it must have been the fabrication and and paint was included, but not erection or something, so they bumped up their price.
And a lot more concrete from the first estimate to the second.
Okay.
Just another question, too. I know when we talked about this last, there's a mention of that pole up on the hill that Frank Terrell mentioned. That was the old, 200-foot pole that was used for something?
Right.
Was that a no-go.
I went and met with them and to try to take that pole down, and because the way they was going to take it down, they'll cut it in like 10-foot pieces. So we will have to weld on. You know,
understand. Just asking.
And they're not going to get straight clean welds all the way around.
Sure.
So it was going to be not a pretty pole once we got it back together. So we decided to go with a new pole.
If we went with the second option of the full collar, is it necessary to have the leg bolts? The collar itself would be enough to support the towing pole?
The bolts won't. The new bolts coming through, that's not all the way. Based on its structural, yes. It'll be able to withstand this, the pole weight.
Right. What I'm saying is, if we just have the collar attached to the pole without the leg bolts, yeah.
Oh, I think it'll. I need to check the structural, not structural engineer, but I believe the pole would start to slide and maybe not be locked and secured in place, so that could cause some stress on the place and cause, you know, the toe to fall down and whatnot. But because if we're putting a lot of stress on these, on this bracing, the 8-inch diameter pipe is coming from the steel pipe, and we're not really giving that support, it's just hanging in there, so... I'll have to check with the structural and get more of a structural engineering type of comment back to you when I come in. But
I'm just curious.
It's just having it out there in the air, open air, that can ship up and down.
Well, I guess that's the real question. Is the brace going to keep the pole from going back and forth, or is it designed also to keep it from going up and down?
Right. It was my understanding of what type of stabilization system we wanted was to something that can hold the pole in place. Not necessarily something that's just a sleeve that the pole still can wiggle with.
Yeah, this covers the shear weight and the side to side, which I think is the safest route to go for as far as public safety concerns go, obviously.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily confident that putting the ring all the way around it is less invasive or isn't going to create just as much damage as drilling through it, because the ring is going to trap water in it, and it's going to create an area where generally the poles, when they're put out in the cold like that, are always wet, and it's just always going to be holding moisture next to the pole. So I guess I'm inclined to think that even though we're doing through bolting of the pole, that it's still probably the best solution for the pole. Is visually the least obtrusive from an aesthetic standpoint. And I think that that's important given that there is no plan for restoration of the pole at this point. It sounds as if it's a preservation by holding the toothpick in the air kind of thing, not any additional means to protect it. So I think that it meets the criteria to just go ahead and rebolt it.
I'm throwing this out there, you know, for discussion. Do you think, you know, having the ring on the outside, even though that it would trap water and maybe some moss and other things in there, it's still more accessible to service over the long term than maybe having a bolt through the middle, like with the bolts penetrating all the way through, allow water and pest infiltration that a ring like that wouldn't?
Well, we were talking about that. He's going to do a little bit of research to see if they can recess the bolt enough so that a wood plug can be put in with some sort of a phenolic glue or something like that that's going to seal it in there so that there's no way for moisture to get into the bolt, and combine that with a stainless steel bolting process. It would seem to me to be the best, least intrusive way to do it as well.
It's actually a good point, Ed, because the brace type 2 has it, I assume they're field welding the plate together there. So in order to get this ring back off, because likely we aren't going to be able to to detach the pole, the supporting pole for it, and lift it 50 feet in the air over the top of this totem pole to be removed at a later date, they would end up having to cut the steel plates that surround it, which may damage the pole in that process if they were...
I didn't get that. I thought that the ring was two pieces.
Yeah. It's two pieces, but then it says welded together on the left side. There's a note that says the plates are welded together. So both the act of welding next to this piece of tinder and the act of trying to cut it out at a later date are probably more intrusive than if this is just essentially pinned with through bolts.
Okay.
In my own opinion, others are entitled to their own opinion, but that's my opinion. That's my opinion, period. I say that a lot too, so I apologize.
I don't know what would preserve the integrity more, the brace or the through bolt. So I don't have any expertise on that. Maybe architects would actually do that. If I still feel that if we were to treat this as an art object, we would be treating it differently than if we're treating it as an archaeological artifact. I don't think it's quite the same. So as an art object, I think our mission would be to keep it up, and if it's an archaeological artifact, I feel like we don't want to penetrate the surface at all.
Well, I feel like part of the, we can't really treat it like an art object anymore, because no matter what we do as far as putting holes in it and other pieces of metal in it, we already have a gigantic piece of steel sticking out of the ground next to it that wasn't there before, that totally artistically compromises the original intent of the pole. But I see what you're saying. I'm having a hard time deciding whether we're trying to diminish visual impact or trying to against further damage primarily.
If I might interject and offer sort of a little bit of opinion regarding, as an artifact, one of the things you want to look at if you're going to disturb it is if you're going to do something that's going to affect its diagnostic value or create cultural information. It is a large piece of wood. There are decorative elements to it, and there are elements to it that would tell you about how it was carved, how it's structured, and things like that. So I think that, in either case, it's going to be evasive. Just the act of stabilizing a pole in place like this is going to require, physical intervention. And so I think that, from my professional opinion, is that there's, to a certain degree, it's going to be unavoidable. You don't want to lose irreplaceable historical material, especially when it contributes both to the visual character of an object, or if losing that material somehow is irreplaceable, it creates a situation in which you're losing information. In this case, I don't think you're losing information. I think that the points of whether or not the intervention itself, sort of like the cure is worse than the disease, where you intervene and cause like a situation in which it might affect it negatively in the future. That's a good concern. I think a well made one. So I guess that's my two cents on that. The ring is certainly a more visually impactful thing. Whether or not it impacts its sort of the interpretive value or the compromises it in a way that it somehow loses its historical significance, being that the historic significance, a lot of it is its context, the time it was built and what it represents. So I think these are all good questions to ask. I guess that's the two cents I'd put out.
The only other concern that I could think of when I was looking at this this week was it's a quite an old piece of wood, so I imagine it's, you know, fairly stable at this point, but I don't know how much there would, you know, change in size over, you know, between seasons, between wet and dry seasons and cold and hot seasons. So one concern I had, and I again wanted to throw this out for discussion, was if it's attached rigidly, do you think it could be a concern that it could, expansion and contraction of it could actually create wear or, you know, stress at the connection points? Is that something that we should ask the city designer to think about? Or
if you want me to, yes, I can make a note of that.
Okay.
And let him know.
I think that at this point it would be helpful probably for Darius to be able to take away if there's a revert approach, and then of course questions the commission has also the one that needs some follow-up. I think that Darius, can you tell us a little bit about the timeline that you're on?
The timeline? Which timeline? The one to build it? The one to...
Yeah, sure.
Well, when you guys gave me the heads up as far as the bracing, what we want to do with the bracing, I can get this done within and get things out the bid and get somebody on there within 2-3 months. So the longer we go back and forth with the design, the longer it's going to be before I can actually get some out in the street and actually award it and the contractor building will be designed. So typically it takes 2.5-3 months from the period I get a full set of designs to go out to bid and advertise and award and then start construction. So it'll take maybe 2 weeks for us to put the bid package together once we get the right correct design and go through all the legal paperwork we got to do, and then I would say 2.5 months we can be locked and loaded ready for the construction. So that's pretty much the construction timeline for this. Design wise, 2 weeks from if we say we want to use brace type number one, I can just go ahead and get these questions answered with some of the expansion, some of the wood plugins, or an inset with the through bolts and whatnot, so we can kind of get create some type of sealant to go around it to make sure we block all the moisture. We don't bring moisture into the pole, so I can go back to our structural guy and talk to him about some of those issues, and I'm sure within a week or so you can have the answers back to me, and I can turn them over to Ruben, and Ruben can push them forward to you guys for another type of review comment period. So as soon as you guys give me word which option you want to go with, I'll do my best to get this off my desk and, you know, ready for some work to get done on this pole. It's been sitting there for a long time like this, and it's a high sword for the city, so.
Yeah. Well, as far as the expansion question that you brought up, I wonder if addressing that really would substantially change the bracing method that would be used anyway, or just change slightly what kind of materials were used, or some considerations in the plates, but I don't think it would change the concept entirely in any way. Another question I had, though, was if you could explain the difference between the plate brace versus the pipe brace, if you know.
No, I don't know why he wanted to use the plate. He's with the option 3 versus option 1 and 2.
Yeah,
I have to get some type of...
Probably
because the plate doesn't go all the way around. It probably needs some of the stronger to hold the backside of the pole and brace it against the new pole, but that's just mine. I guess, but
they're just providing a different visual option. It's essentially the same design. If you see that the shape of the half circle ring that's in the flat there on the first two options, there's a similar sort of shape allotted for in the flat plate. All they're really doing is replacing what is a steel tube in options 1 and 2 with a flat plate with the two stiffeners on either side as just a other option to it. You can also see that in doing that, they don't have to put the horizontal pipe brace through the pipe column of the the pole, the supporting pole.
Oh, okay.
So it was just, I think they're just presenting a different visual option for us, not a something that differs drastically in structure. The structure of how it actually attaches to the pole, to the totem pole, is the same
still
in the
same.
One and three.
Okay.
And I can also talk to our structural guy and get an answer back on that question too. More of a structural answer.
So, if I understand that, the third option would be much thinner than the first option, is that right?
Right. It would be a half-inch plate.
And the other is a
8-inch
pipe.
Well, we don't know what the height of those stiffeners on either side are, so.
Well, it says type 1 be attached to the support pole via an 8-inch pipe blades.
He's
talking about the thickness of the side of the...
That's what I'm talking about, too.
Okay. Type 3 uses a cylinder brace, which enables the legs to use a flat quarter-inch plate. He's describing the quarter-inch plate, but there's clearly a stiffener that's in the drawings.
I'm responsible for that sentence, too, so...
That's... Oh.
No, I'm just saying...
So that's not written by the structural engineer.
So the stiffener on the outside, we don't know how wide that would be.
That's correct.
I guess that would be something to consider, too. I don't know if you could give side views of what the different options are. I mean, if one is considerably thinner than the other, that might be more visually pleasing. If they're about the same, it can make a huge difference.
So the sense I'm getting is that one and three are the most acceptable.
I'm of the opinion that brace one is sufficient to satisfy me, with the caveats that have been discussed today. The third option, I think, because this is being viewed from below, is actually visually more obtrusive, regardless of what the thickness of the stiffener plates are. Often, when you see a pipe in perspective view, round objects look smaller than an object that's in the flat. It'll generally visually recede, and I prefer, regardless of the thickness of the plates, of the stiffener plates on type 3, I would find type 1 to be more desirable.
Are you making that a motion for...
I'd be happy to make a motion if others are willing to go that path. If there's not more discussion. Sweet. I will make a motion. If Ruben, could you reiterate the concerns that were raised or approved? This is my list. The first item was if the through bolts could be plugged with wood on the face side of the totem pole. The second was... The second was resolving any moisture infiltration concerns that would occur from the through bolts going through the totem pole. The third item was...
expanding of the wood.
Was wood expansion and contraction.
Difference in accommodating.
Yeah. Okay.
And I think that there was also a comment about using stainless steel as a non-corrosive material.
Okay. I don't know about the... I'm not going to specify a material, because I think that if we did do this with stainless steel, this number that we see of 39,948 would grow exponentially, so I will say a non-corrosive metallic material. All right. We don't have that one sentence item like we usually have, do we? I move that we approve the fireman's park totem pole. design at 801 A Street as submitted, with option one as the brace type that is preferred by the Landmarks Commission, with the additional request that the applicant consider the through bolts being plugged on the face side of the totem pole with wood plugs, that the through bolts be sealed in a way that does not allow moisture infiltration into the totem pole, and that the wood, the expansion and contraction of the totem pole be considered in the bracing design, and that non-corrosive material be used where penetrating the totem pole.
Motion by Commissioner Steele and a second by Commissioner York. Any discussion? Further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? No.
No.
Okay. So, blink, you guys have it. So, thank you.
So, I'll get these answered and I'll send it to Ruben and we'll.
I think how
you want it to work.
So the outcome from here is that the commission has voted to approve the bracing with attachment option type one. The issues that were named in the motion, the commission would like addressed. I mean, you can work on clarifying the design on that. I can provide a circle back as provide an update to the commission. But I think that if these conditions are met, the commission probably doesn't need to see it again at this point, unless there's a change in the conditions or some other circumstances.
Out of it, so. Did you want to keep it?
Sure.
No, you may have.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
All right. Moving on to item number four, board briefing. Old City Hall. Is that you?
Yes, that's me.
All right.
This is going to be a really short update. I know that I think it was on September 11th. We reported to the commission that we were going to have a tentative design briefing on the roof project for Old City Hall. You may have read in the paper recently, I didn't bring the article with me, I apologize, but the city reached a stipulated agreement with the building owner for them to prepare their own plan to repair the roof. That plan is due to my office next week. They're working on their returning some bid documents to the city. But basically, the agreement is that they will address the roof concerns themselves. They'll present a roof proposal, a plan for documentation and salvage materials, and so forth, and bring that to the commission. We're going to actually have that scheduled on the agenda for the 9th. So at this time, the city is not presenting repair plan to the commission because the owners have signed an agreement to the effect that they will take care of that, in addition to some other things that have been outstanding on the building. So we'll be working with them over the next couple of weeks to get the design package ready and to the commission for October 9th. And so that's the my really, really brief status update. I just wanted to make sure that the commission was aware I had reported previously we'd be back by this time, and we're not going to be because we're not doing the project, so, which is good news. And so we're working closely with them. They are taking steps forward, and it looks like we have some progress, so I remain hopeful. So,
Ruben, one question. It wasn't clear to me. Did the agreement occur in the course of the hearing on the 18th, or did it occur before the hearing?
We were hammering out an agreement, and the city came into the hearing with the agreement prepared.
Okay.
And so that was the discussion that had been going back and forth for several days, and so the hearing officer, I don't know all the procedural stuff necessarily, but the hearing officer signed the order that the owner agreed to.
Okay.
So.
I wasn't quite sure how that happened. I was just kind of curious.
All right, moving on to item 5, board business and preservation planning, I believe.
More. Again. I have a couple of things that are off, that are just tailing add on some that I'm going to talk about in a second. First, I just want to send a note here. Several folks that have their commission terms coming up here soon. I've notified folks, but the commission is going to see a general recruitment out. I think we have 4 potential appointments, 1 vacancy, and so we're going to identify the council meeting which we're targeting. So you'll see in the next couple of weeks a general announcement for Landmarks Commission applications. The city requires us to announce and recruit for every time there's a term expiration. And so I hope that our incumbent commissioners will reapply to the commission. City actually, there is an application on the city's boards and commissions website that each time you've got to do it, unfortunately. And I can provide assistance with that for folks that have any questions pointing you to it and so on. You can just send the one you have before. But we'll be doing a wide announcement citywide and sending out a release. And so I just didn't want to surprise anybody that'll be coming up. So, and I think we have actually existing right now an architect vacancy that's been open for a while. So if anybody happens to know an architect who has itch to be in service in the commission, or you have a grudge against, you can pass them on to me or let them know that we're looking. So, secondly, I sent out an email about the Architectural Review Committee. I'd like to schedule one for October 7th. I've got 2 agenda items for that Architectural Review Committee. The first is at 715 North Grant Street. There's a project that's in the planning stages right now. It's a single-family residential house. It's a sort of a flat iron-shaped block that's fairly tight, and so they went through setback review and so on. They're going to need some variances for the project, but they have some sort of critical early-stage questions regarding garages and attached or not attached regarding the design guidelines for the historic district. And so I wanted to provide them an opportunity to get some early feedback because they are in a variance process now, which comes before the Landmarks Commission's process, but what they do now will be critical to their design. So secondly is the Bostwick building. If you walk by the Bostwick building in the past couple of days, you may have noticed there's some paint on the storefronts. They're going to be in here next week to talk about that. These are the mahogany storefronts. So I've contacted them recently, and so we're going to bring them forward to the ARC as quickly as possible so we can talk a little bit about how to resolve the issue, if it's resolvable. So lastly, I have one last item that's not ARC necessarily, and I'm going to pass out a couple of things here to the commission. And I'm looking for guidance. Folks may recall 811 North M Street. I have the old application here. This is a residential remodel that included an addition onto the back of the house, window replacement on the sides and the back, and hopefully a restoration on the front. The commission added some meeting, this is way back in April 10th, I think, directed that the front windows be retained and restored if possible. And I just went out to do a site visit the other day to follow up on this and wanted to get some guidance from the commission. We can certainly have further discussions. Basically, the front of the house, and if people would like to see the application, I can pass it out. There are what we thought were double-hung windows on the front of the house, on front bay, on either side of the bay, and then flanking a Victorian fixed pane window with a multicolored light window above it. In the process of working on the house, they've discovered a couple of things. The first couple of windows, they removed the sashes to start working on the restoration. They discovered that the window frames and sashes are actually falling apart as they come out. The joinery is rotted. And the windows themselves, which we thought were double-hung windows, are actually, they are double-hung sashes, but they are not double-hung. The top sash was fixed at a very early period with the chalk of wood stuck in there. There are no weight pockets, and there are no pulleys in these windows. So they just floated in the frames. And so the request is, what they would like to do is they would like to go with the Woodright 400 series windows that they're using elsewhere in the house. Which have already been approved, with the exception of the center fixed window in the bay that has the ornamentation. They're actually having those milled in kind.
You say Woodright 400 series?
I think I believe so. Yes, Anderson Woodright.
Anderson.
The issue is that from the window frame, sill, the frame, the guides and the sashes, especially in the corners, are all fairly bad shape. They were never, like I said, never weighted on windows. And as far as I can look, I looked at the framing on the inside and looked at the window case themselves. They're just, the stuff's not there at all. So by design, the windows themselves, the lower sashes, are held up by, these were added at a later time with little cam locks. They put pressure on the side of the sash, but there's nothing else holding the window up or down, so they're not balanced. And so for operability, for sheer, practicality, these are 1/1 single light windows, and the picture I took on the floor there is the best example I could find of what we had. So it's where the mortise tenon on the corners are coming together. Those are gone. And they've got a number of these. They're sawing and putting in a primed board for the sills themselves. And they've done the outside trim casing work. So I guess that's what I'm looking for from the commission is guidance on this. If you want them to come back, we'd like to do a site visit, or we can administratively go to the Woodright woodclad window in a double hung configuration.
These are the front windows you said that are being rebuilt in kind?
So the windows that we have here are the ones that are the single pane, the Victorian flanked with the rainbow glass. Those are being redone in kind. The glass themselves, these were covered with plywood and painted with a couple layers of paint. The actual glass, they didn't use a single pane in the middle. They actually sandwiched it. There's two pieces overlapping there. I think that was a replacement at some point in the past. The fixed pane below that, they're proposing to continue doing what they're doing, which is get that stabilized as much as they can, lock it into place, and just use what they've got there. On the,
so there's the stop in glass and the existing sash.
Yeah, the stair window here, and then the windows flanking on the bays are the ones they want to replace with the Woodright windows, and that's actually the pieces on the floor there are from their first shot at the stair window right there. I can ask them to come back to the commission if you'd like. The windows themselves that they would order are like a 6-8 week lead time anyways. So, like I said, I think that the reason why they called me is they're getting to a certain point where the sash comes out and comes out in pieces. Then the window case itself starts coming out in pieces. The sash itself is, it's in pretty bad shape, a lot of it. The house itself was in pretty horrifically neglected shape when they started. And so, at any rate, so they called me up and I went out there and they told me what they wanted to do. And I shot some representative photographs where they're at currently in the project.
So it seems to me that, you know, they've uncovered more problems, as you always do with the old houses. And, you know, I think I would be perfectly happy with seeing this, you know, left to staff's judgment on cases, you know, as this develops. You know, the what they're proposing seems to me to be a fairly reasonable thing, given the condition that they found these particular windows in.
Yeah, I think the Anderson Foreign Service is a good reasonable replacement for these, and pretty clearly in pretty bad shape.
These are also.
I don't have any problem with our replacement plan either.
These are also windows that aren't necessarily of high architectural or ornamental value to the house. They're pretty standard double hung windows that I think their replacement wouldn't even be all that noticeable to a passerby or anything. I think it's pretty straightforward. If they were of greater detail, I could see why we would want to go through greater lengths to try and preserve them.
Actually, a little more important part of those is how they sell in case and when they put them in.
Yep.
So is the consensus then to delegate this decision to staff? Is that what I'm hearing?
That's fine with me. That's all right.
Very good.
So can I just, I'm going to go ahead and schedule an ARC for October 2nd at 5:30. I'll put out notice. Let me know if you can't make it, which is fine. We don't have to have a quorum for that meeting. It's a feedback meeting, but the more folks we can get there, the better it is for the applicants.
Can you tell me the address again?
715 North Grand, and then the Bostwick Building are the two things we'll be up. The 715 North Grand is a vacant lot.
Item 6, chair comments. I don't have any announcements or comments from the commissioners. I think we're adjourned.